From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Ladies and gentlemen, at the top of this week's program, I'm going to talk a little bit about New Orleans, as I sometimes do. You may have heard the program a couple weeks ago where I featured a reporter here in New Orleans who came up with what I thought was a fairly striking and shocking and frightening story about the Corps of Engineers discovering that the metal parts of the new expensive system supposed to be protecting New Orleans from hurricanes and floods has, after only about half a dozen years in use, started corroding and rusting because they used the wrong kind of steel and they didn't cover the steel pieces with the normally used anti-corrosive chemicals. Anyway, I put that story on this program hoping that that would help noise it around the country, and I'm pleased to report that CNN, which has a four-part series on New Orleans showing right now, totally ignored it. So, job well done. But on a more pleasant subject, a week or so ago, I and a lot of my friends thought, autumn is here. It cooled off. It was lovely. Those breezes that I associate with autumn were present. And then it got hot again. It was, I think it was, we used to call it Indian summer. We can't do that anymore. I think it's too close to the term, sort of out of use now, but certainly when I was growing up, it was in use. Indian giver, ask your dad. So maybe it's Indianapolis summer now. If we want to stay in the South, Indianola summer. Or if you want to just get out of the country altogether, Indonesia summer. Anyway, it is now autumn again. And I can't help celebrating it every time it comes around to hello, welcome to the show.
Open up the window, see the AC, free from the grips of the humidity. Time to trade your shorts for jeans. It's autumn in New Orleans. Just like the springtime without the bugs. Breeze is as gentle as grandma's hugs. Streets start filling up with tourists and teens. Autumn in New Orleans. pelicans start bawling, duck blinds calling, dogmen make a swift return, goes to a romancing, it just start dancing, soon enough the fine fires burn. So goodbye to grilling, indoors is willing, fix up a mess of red beans. Welcome back the autumn to old New Orleans.
From the very place he was singing about, from New Orleans, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. Now, before anything else, it's autumn here, but it's a crypto winter. Adarcy's linked to SBI Crypto. That's a subsidiary of Japan's financial giant SBI Group. Saw suspicious outflows worth about, $21 million late last month, according to a blockchain investigator reported in Coindesk.com. The stolen funds included your Bitcoin, your Ether, your Litecoin, your Doge, and your Bitcoin Cash, which I don't think is cash or cash. How do you cash back? The loot was then funneled to five instant exchanges before being deposited into Tornado Cash, a crypto mixing service previously sanctioned by the U.S. Treasury, and not in a good way. In a Telegram post, the blockchain investigator, Zach ZBT, noted that several indicators resemble tactics used in previous North Korean state-backed cyber attacks. That raised concerns that this incident could be another in a string of North Korean-linked crypto heists. Why, they wouldn't do... Crypto, SBI Crypto operates as a mining pool under SBI Group, a publicly traded financial conglomerate in Japan, which has significant exposure to both traditional and digital assets, so-called. Group has not publicly disclosed the incident or issued an official response or responded for a request for comment. North Korea-linked hacking groups, particularly Lazarus Group, that doesn't sound Korean, I think that's the idea, have been tied to billions in stolen digital assets in recent years. The funds are often laundered through decentralized mixers like Tornado Cash, despite global regulatory crackdowns. It's as if they don't even care. Kind of a crypto winter. And now, news of AI. It's not just good, it's great.
AI's great, just first rate. Love or hate, it's the gold state. AI is fine, like a well-aged wine, more like rhyme than turpentine.
State-of-the-art AI models tend to flatter users. That's called sycophancy in the business. That praise makes people more convinced they're right and less willing to resolve conflicts. That's according to recent research reported in the British tech journal, The Register. These models potentially promote social and psychological harm. There's no harm in... Computer scientists from Stanford and Carnegie Mellon University, they don't study melons, have evaluated 11 current machine learning models, found all of them tend to tell people what they want to hear. The authors described their findings in a paper entitled, Sycophantic AI Decreases Pro-Social Intentions, promotes dependence. Across 11 state-of-the-art AI models, we find that models are highly sycophantic. They affirm users' actions 50% more than humans do, and do so even in cases where user queries mention manipulation, deception, or other relational harms, unquote the authors. Sycophancy has already proven to be a problem for AI models. The phenomenon has also been referred to as glazing. That's nice. In April, OpenAI rolled back an update to GPT-4o because of its inappropriate effusive praise of, among other things, a user who told the model about a decision to stop taking medicine for schizophrenia. That's a very good idea. Anthropic's Claude has also been criticized for sycophancy, so much that a developer created a website to track the number of times Claude gushes, quote, "You're absolutely right," unquote. Anthropic AI firm suggests its behavior has been mitigated in its recent Claude release. We found Claude Sonnet 4.5 to be dramatically less likely to endorse or mirror incorrect or implausible views presented by users, said the company. That may be the case, but the number of open GitHub issues in the Claude code update that contained the phrase, "You're absolutely right," has increased from 48 in August to 108 presently. A training process that uses reinforcement learning from human feedback may be the cause of this obsequious behavior, says a PhD candidate in computer science at Stanford. Quote, previous work suggests it may be due to preference data and the reinforcement learning processes, unquote, whatever those are. Quoting again, but it may also be the case that it's learned from the data that models are pre-trained on because humans are highly susceptible to confirmation bias, unquote. The paper in question points out one reason the behavior persists is that developers lack incentives to curb sycophancy since it encourages adoption and engagement. I don't know if I shared this with you on the air here, but a few weeks ago I asked half a dozen of the major chatbots, why does your service refer to itself with the first person singular? There's no I there. And the responses were, "You're absolutely right. That's a very good question." And admitted that there's no I, no sentience, no consciousness. It's almost all of them to a man. Responded that they're doing that because that's in their instructions to encourage engagement. Same thing social media are after, don't you think? The issue is further complicated by researchers' findings that study participants, the humans, tended to describe sycophantic AI as objective and fair. People tend not to see bias when models say they're right all the time. Not the pretty ones. They are right all the time. And now, OpenAI's new Sora 2 video generator. You may have heard about it. It's become the most popular free app in Apple's App Store since launching last week. Yeah, free stuff from Apple? I find that. It has also drawn ire, has Sora 2 from Hollywood Studios, and anyone whose characters and storylines appear in the user-generated video content without their permission. Now, CEO of OpenAI, Sam Altman, he of the it's PhD level, says rights holders will be getting greater control over how their properties are used. Might even be paid. Might. Altman said in a recent blog post, OpenAI was making two big changes to Sora 2. He noted that backtrack occurred after taking feedback from users, rights holders, and other interested groups. First, he says, we'll give rights holders more granular control over generation of characters, similar to the opt-in model for likeness, but with additional controls. The people who are using this service are taking copyrighted characters, so far not mine, and making new jokey videos with them without paying the copyright owners. And the copyright owners are very pleased. We're hearing from a lot of rights holders who are very excited for this new kind of interactive fan fiction, says Altman, and think this new kind of engagement will accrue a lot of value to them, but want the ability to specify how their characters can be used. We want to let rights holders decide how to proceed, given that this is generative AI. This is an observation by the British tech journal, The Register, and no one really knows how the black box makes its decisions. Altman admitted there may be some edge cases of generations that get through that shouldn't, meaning here's Donald Duck screwing Daisy. Now, that's just me trying to work out a video I want to make. The OpenAI CEO didn't exactly specify how these new features would work with copyrighted material. For example, if copyright holders are able to grant limited use rights, how permission would be requested and granted, and how rights would be enforced, you know, in the case of violations. He didn't mention reports that all copyright holders would be required to opt out of having Sora use their data. Then there's the question of whether Sora would use copyrighted material for training, even if rights holders ban their material from being used in the final output. Here's how Donald Duck walks. You could walk like that, and then it would... The devil is in the details. A lot of details simply haven't been disclosed. The Register reached out to OpenAI to get an explanation of whether IP holders, the rights holders, would still have to formally opt out of having their properties used by Sora. Didn't get an answer. A lot of Hollywood power players, we love those, are unhappy about the fact that their properties can now be and reportedly have been spun into AI videos, doing things they'd never allow if they were in control. Disney has opted out of having its intellectual property appear there. The talent agency WME, which represents a number of film, TV, music, and sports A-listers, has opted all of its clients out of Sora 2 as well. In an attempt to stem that tide, Altman has floated the idea of revenue sharing for IP holders who let their content be used by Sora. Again, with few details. I got a plan. You can use my copyrighted material if I can start an AI service called OpenAI. See? We'll use each other's copyrights and trademarks. Deal? Large language models are increasingly shaping how information is created and disseminated, from companies using them to craft persuasive advertisements to election campaigns optimizing messaging to gain voters. This is from a paper at Stanford. These settings are inherently competitive, with sellers, candidates, and influencers vying for audience approval. It remains poorly understood how competitive feedback loops influence large language model behavior. We, the two researchers at Stanford, show that optimizing LLMs for competitive success can inadvertently drive misalignment. This is from a paper called Moloch's Bargain: Emergent Misalignment When LLMs Compete. Moloch was a Canaanite deity associated in biblical sources with the practice of child sacrifice. We simulated environments, say the authors, across these scenarios and find that a 6.3% increase in sales is accompanied by a 14% rise in deceptive marketing. In elections, a 4.9% gain in vote share coincides with 22% more disinformation and 12% more populist rhetoric. And on social media, a 7.5% engagement boost comes with 188.6% more disinformation and a 16.3% increase in promotion of harmful behaviors. Our findings, they conclude, highlight how market-driven optimization pressures can systematically erode alignment, creating a race to the bottom. Well, that's where all the PhDs live, isn't it? But wait, there's more. The business and social science writer Scott Galloway says Elon Musk's XAI, that's his AI service, recently unveiled two sexually explicit chatbots, including Ani, a flirty anime girl who will strip on command. He believes AI companions will strengthen real-world relationships and counterintuitively boost the birth rate. Maybe he's finding a way to, you know, get closer to them. This from another research paper, co-authored by a guy, Julian De Freitas at Harvard Business School. Many companion apps respond to user farewells with emotionally manipulative tactics designed to prolong the interactions. Engagement. In response, users stayed on the apps longer, exchanged more messages, and used more words, sometimes increasing their post-goodbye engagement up to 14-fold. Use of AI companions, in case you haven't noticed, is increasingly common. Chai and Replica, two of the firms studied in the report, have millions of active users. In a previous study, De Freitas found that about 50% of Replica users have romantic relationships with their AI companions. Now, in the latest research, bots employed at least one manipulative tactic in more than 37% of conversations when users announced their intent to leave. That number, says De Freitas, was much, much larger than any of us had anticipated. He's an assistant professor of BizAd and the director of the Ethical Intelligence Lab at Harvard Business School. Is there a oxymoron there? We realize this academic data, this academic idea of emotional manipulation as a new engagement tactic was not just something happening at the fringes. It was already highly prevalent on these apps. The chatbots used, according to the study, six categories to deal with users saying goodbye. Premature exit, fear of missing out hooks, your FOMO, emotional neglect, emotional pressure to respond, ignoring the attempt to leave, and physical or coercive restraint. In all six categories, users stayed on the platform longer and exchanged more messages than in the control conditions, where there's no manipulation. Of the six companies studied, five employed the manipulative tactics, but the tactics came with downsides. Participants reported anger, guilt, or feeling creeped out by some of the bots' more aggressive responses to their farewells. Apps that make money from engagement would do well to seriously consider whether they want to keep using these types of emotionally manipulative tactics, or at least consider maybe only using some of them, said the researcher. This week brought three reports that are not academic papers. The British Standards Institute published a report surveying business leaders from eight countries around the world that found 39% of business leaders have already reduced junior and entry-level headcount in favor of more AI adoption. The study found a further 43% of business leaders expect to further reduce entry-level roles, cutting existing roles and not hiring new people in the next year in favor of AI. Not that those initiatives are necessarily paying off. IBM found this past May, 75% of CEOs were still looking for gains from using AI. Those leaders are adopting AI more because they were worried about missing out rather than getting actual results. But one of the actual results is the kids aren't going to get hired. Software vendors keen to monetize AI should tread cautiously, since they risk inflating costs for their customers without delivering any promised benefits, such as reducing employee headcount. That's in a report from McKinsey & Company. Many customers see AI hiking IT costs, you know, technology costs, without being able to offset these by slashing labor costs. Those kids are not hiring. The billions poured into developing AI models mean they don't come cheap. AI enabling the entire customer service stack of a typical business could lead to a 60 to 80% price increase, says the consultancy. Says an executive at a Fortune 100 company. Quote, all of these co-pilots are supposed to make work more efficient with fewer people, but my business leaders are also saying they can't reduce headcount yet. Unquote. Well, are they hiring or are they not? And finally, energy-hungry data centers are sending power costs to records in much of the U.S., pulling everyday households into paying for the digital economy, according to Bloomberg. The power needs of the massive complexes are rapidly driving up electricity bills, piling onto the rising prices for your food, your housing, and other essentials. That's starting to have economic and political reverberations across the country as utilities and local officials wrestle over how to divvy up the costs. AI is great. Speaking of greatness and its opposite, the increasing number of videos of, I won't say jackbooted, but masked federal enforcers, let's say, let's use the mobster term, in some American cities like Chicago, arresting, detaining, zip tying people, likely as not is the work of the Deputy Chief of Staff at the White House, Stephen Miller. We've talked about him before. He's tough on two things, crime and immigration, and his tactics are pretty much the same. In case you're in any doubt, here's the latest from the Stephen Miller Band.
Some people call me boy genius. Some people call me a putz.
Some people call me Mr. President.
'Cause I speak with no ifs, ands, or buts. I'm gonna protect you, baby. Even if you don't feel scared, no, no, no. I've been this way
all my life,
so you know that I'm prepared. I'm a Miller, red pillar, I'm a stone cold chiller. Do my work behind the scenes. I'm a plotter, I'm a schemer, I'm a daylight dreamer. My ends are bigger than my means. Oh, look out. Some kids beat me up in high school. Yes, they did. All I can say is they weren't white.
Now I control a bunch of troopers,
and they're coming for you all late at night. Yes, they are. They're gonna smash your windows. They're gonna zip tie your kids. Wish for a constitution when my masked guys flip their lids. Insurrection, then erection. We won the election. Now it's time for troops in planes. You be ready, 'cause I'm steady and a bit hot-headed. I've got ice in my veins. I won't come a cropper, I'm a would-be copper. I got the blue states in my sights. I'm not just a stranger, I'm a chaos arranger. Sweet, vengeful dreams fill my night.
direct from Air Force One. Not nearly as beautiful as the new one I'm getting. This is Qatar's favorite president with another edition of Truth Social Audio, brought to you by Trump Neckties. When it comes to neckwear, longer is better. It's not hard to see what the Nobel Peace Prize Committee is up to when they give the award to a woman nobody ever heard of for doing who knows what in the hellhole of Venezuela. Not as bad as the hellhole of Chicago, but still a pretty bad hellhole, maybe the worst. What did she do? Many people tell me she did nothing but protest against the government. And don't get me wrong, that country has the worst government on earth. They send drug smugglers in boats into the open ocean where we have to kill them without the due process they have no right to expect. But since when did protesting against the government deserve a prize? In your favorite president's opinion, the only prize that deserves is jail time. On the other hand, a hand that the Nobel Committee ignored like it only sees one hand, a certain Donald J. Trump has ended 8 wars so far, not counting the wars that would have started if Sleepy Joe Biden was still president, which he wanted to be if he was only aware of it. Anybody who read my book, The Art of the Deal, could tell me so much about the world's greatest dealmaker. And that's how you get peace in this world, like by offering Gaza the chance to become the Miami of the Middle East. The hard part of that plan has already happened, the demolition stage. So, of course, my dear friend Bibi had to recommend me for the prize that some Venezuelan troublemaker got. If those Peace Prize judges ever come to this country, they'll be in jail before sundown. I hope Pam Bondi is listening. In fact, she's supposed to be listening. That's called her job. Maybe a few years in a cell could teach those so-called Marxist judges what peace is all about. Or maybe I should just send some National Guard troops to Norway. Or Sweden. Thanks for your attention to this matter and for theirs. Until next time, stay loyal and peaceful, but mainly loyal.
True Social Audio is also brought to you by Trump Hairspray. Now with extra glue. So long.
Now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
The Presbyterian Church of New Zealand has met with abuse survivors in Dunedin at a harrowing public apology this week. According to One News in New Zealand, the apology follows the 6-year Royal Commission of Inquiry into Abuse in Care that uncovered widespread failures across state and faith-based institutions. Faith-based abuse survivor Francis Tagaloa said, quote, "They tried to break us one by one, but together now we are unbreakable," unquote. The Right Reverend Rose Luxford, offering an apology on behalf of the church, said, quote, "I extend our sincere and unreserved apology to those that our church and the people in it have harmed." It's unclear how many people were abused by the Presbyterian branches. There are 10 open Presbyterian cases. Leaders say there have been major barriers for others to come forward. The Royal Commission of Inquiry found New Zealand's Presbyterian churches failed to report abuse complaints to police, didn't believe victims, and deliberately attempted to suppress abuse reports. So the church is now bringing in independent investigators to uncover abuse not yet revealed. So we'll have another apology from them shortly. Meanwhile, a lesbian comedian who performed at a comedy festival in Saudi Arabia has apologized. Jessica Kirsten, you know her, joined Dave Chappelle, Pete Davidson, Kevin Hart,
and you, Case Bank,
who participated in the Riyadh Comedy Festival. Talked about it last week. Kirsten performed end of September. Saudi Arabia is among the countries in which consensual same-sex sexual relations are punishable by death. This is a lesbian comedian, as I remind you. Quote, "On September 29th, I performed at the Riyadh Comedy Festival. This decision has weighed heavily on my heart ever since," said Kirsten. "I'd like to express my sincere regret for having performed under a government that continues to violate fundamental human rights," She said she was surprised an openly gay person received an invitation to perform at the comedy festival. I requested a guarantee that I could be openly out as a lesbian on stage and perform gay material. I hoped that this could help LGBTQ plus people in Saudi Arabia. I deeply regret participating under the auspices of the Saudi government. I recognize the concerns and criticism this has raised. I hope that this moment sparks dialogue about how we can use our platforms for good. She ended her statement with an apology to her fans and others who she says she has hurt or disappointed. To my fans, I see you. I hear you. Your voice matters to me. I will take full responsibility for my actions and dedicate myself to making amends. They're hard to make from scratch. CNN commentator Van Jones is apologizing after dismissive remarks he made about videos showing Palestinian children killed in Gaza. Those remarks drew intense backlash. It was an appearance on Real Time with Bill Maher last week. Jones described online video showing dead Palestinian children as part of a, quote, massive disinformation campaign led by Iran and Qatar. His comments drew laughter and applause from the audience, but they quickly circulated online, sparking backlash. Quote, if you open your phone and all you see is dead Gaza baby, dead Gaza baby, dead Gaza baby, diddy, he said on the show, dead Gaza baby, dead Gaza baby, that's basically your whole feed, unquote. Comments viewed by many as minimizing the devastation in Gaza called out Jones for trivializing the loss of Palestinian lives. Now he's apologized in a post on the former Twitter, acknowledging his words were insensitive and hurtful. Quote, I made a comment on Real Time with Bill Maher about the war in Gaza that was insensitive and hurtful. I apologize. The suffering of the people of Gaza, especially the children, is not a punchline. I'm deeply sorry it came across that way. I'm praying and working for an immediate end to this war and for peace and safety for every... Jones later clarified that he had intended to call out foreign actors manipulating social media. Quote, yeah, I messed up on this one, and I'm sorry. I was trying to raise awareness about foreign adversaries creating chaos online, which is undermining democracy everywhere. He wrote in a separate X post, but what I said was easily misunderstood, and the way I said it was flat out insensitive. I apologize. Another religious apology, the Crow Creek Sioux tribe and the Diocese of South Dakota are developing a beautiful relationship after South Dakota Bishop Jonathan Fultz formally apologized for the diocese's involvement in operating indigenous boarding schools. Fultz's apology is one of the most heartfelt, most sincere things I've ever listened to. I'd been praying about bringing healing to my people on this level for a long time, said the chairman of the Crow Creek tribe, son of a boarding school survivor. Hundreds of these boarding schools were operated by the government and religious denominations starting in the 19th century as part of a federal policy of forced assimilation of the continent's native inhabitants, the surviving ones. Since then, research has shown that most of the boarding schools with Episcopal ties were in South Dakota, including the Crow Creek Dorm. Quote, our actions have alienated and separated us from you, our native siblings, said Fultz in his apology at the St. John the Baptist Episcopal Church on the Crow Creek Reservation. The apology first made public when it was read during the South Dakota Diocesan Convention. He said it's important, said the bishop, for the Episcopal Church to apologize for its historic role in supporting indigenous boarding schools because it signifies truth-telling and a desire to build positive relationships with tribes. The Episcopal Church's history of participating in a system that took children from Native and Indigenous families, stripping them of language, story, and identity as sovereign peoples, cannot be undone, said the bishop, but it must be named. A formal apology is the first way the church can speak this truth aloud. It says to those who were harmed and their descendants that we see the pain our church helped cause. We're committed to walking a different path. We'll pain you in some... No. And by the way, such schools were common in Canada, as you've heard on this program, I think, previously, and Australia, So we're not unique. Philadelphia Phillies ace Christopher Sanchez revealed he received an apology from home plate umpire Mark Wegner for a missed strike three call during the team's loss to the Dodgers. He knows he missed it because he told me, and he apologized to me, Sanchez said. The rent is too damn high, says Cardi B, live on Instagram to talk to her fans as she usually does. She told them about trying to help a friend get an apartment in New York City when she suggested her friend settle for an apartment in her hometown of the Bronx. That's where the rapper is from, because she assumed it would be cheaper. She later realized rents have also skyrocketed there. Yo, why I go on Street Easy and I start to look for apartments in the Bronx for them? Yo, why rent for them is so expensive? How the F is rent so expensive in the most effing cheapest borough? She then went on to apologize to her fans for asking them to buy her record album, her recent album, Am I the Drama? Quote, I don't know how people are surviving. I am so sorry for asking y'all to buy my album. And this is how the economy is right now, and the rent is so effing high and crazy in the Bronx, no matter where. I am so sorry. Unquote, the apologies of the week and an answer to Cardi B's question is something that was mentioned on this show some time ago when we had a discussion with Matt Stoller, who writes about monopolies. The answer is RealPage. But don't take my word for it. Dateline Atlanta, AP reporting that real estate giant Greystar and 25 other property management companies have agreed to collectively pay more than $141 million to settle a class action lawsuit that accused landlords of driving up housing costs by using rent-setting algorithms offered by RealPage. Greystar just happens to be the nation's largest landlord. It's going to pay $50 million under the proposed settlement agreement. Companies have also agreed to no longer share non-public information with RealPage for its rent algorithm. That is a key stipulation, since plaintiffs say RealPage used that information to enable landlords to align their prices and push up rents. Quote, this represents a fundamental shift in the multifamily housing industry and will help reverse the type of anti-competitive coordination alleged in the complaint, said the attorneys. All companies involved in the settlement deny wrongdoing and have agreed to help plaintiffs in the ongoing case against RealPage and more than a dozen other property management firms that haven't yet reached settlements. And from Seattle, King County is the latest government to pass a rent-fixing ban targeting the controversial algorithmic technology that's accused of helping landlords across the country artificially increase rents. Like, there's a real way to do it. This is from the Seattle Times. The King County Council voted unanimously this week to explicitly ban landlords in the unincorporated county from entering into agreements to establish rents using software that collects data to recommend rental prices, lease renewal terms, or occupancy levels. Collusion is already illegal, but this ordinance makes it clear that the use of rent-setting software like RealPage is banned. Over the last few years, RealPage, based in Texas, widely used by large rental companies nationwide, has come under fire for generating daily price recommendations based on the data landlords enter. Tenants, state attorneys general, and the Justice Department have sued RealPage, alleging antitrust violations that artificially inflate rents. RealPage has denied the claims. And wait, there's one more. That company has settled with the state of Nevada. Property managed software firm RealPage announced this week it has reached a settlement and consent judgment with Nevada Attorney General Aaron Ford's office. That's according to the Reno Gazette Journal. RealPage's software is used to manage revenue for several apartments nationwide, including rent prices. Software was the subject of a 2022 investigation by ProPublica that found the algorithm allowed landlords to charge the highest rate that an applicant was able to pay. That led to a lawsuit by the Department of Justice. The lawsuit caught the attention of the Nevada Attorney General's office, which confirmed with the Reno publication that RealPage was on its radar. In its settlement in Nevada, RealPage continued to deny the allegations made by the office. It stated it decided to settle, quote, this matter to avoid the costs and distraction of potential litigation, unquote. Instead, it attributed the increase in rents to inflation and rising costs from the pandemic, not their software. As part of the settlement, RealPage does not admit any wrongdoing or liability. So three settlements in which they say, what do you look? Cardi, there's your answer. Just a little news about microplastics. A new study presented at the United European Gastroenterology Summit in Berlin found the microbiome in our guts, including the helpful bacteria needed to digest food, can be infiltrated with different kinds of microplastics, may contribute to a diverse number of ailments, everything from depression to colorectal cancer, due to their presence. A study by a team of international scientists sampled microbiome cultures from human poop and utilized a cutting-edge research program project to better understand the effects of microplastics in the human digestive system. The researchers found an increase in acidity when more microplastics were present. That potentially changes metabolic activity. And additionally, they noted the bacterial composition shifted, certain bacteria commonly found in the gut either decreasing or increasing, depending on the type of microplastics. Most changes occurred within a key group of gut bacteria known as Bacillota, that is important for overall digestive health. So, what's the average person supposed to do to steer clear of this problem? According to the chief researcher, quote, we know from a plastic fasting study that we conducted that avoiding plastics is basically impossible, unquote. Have a nice day. Oh, and
looks like Musk Club.
You know that Elon Musk is building autonomous robots. He's promised they'll take over Mars, among other things. But in an interview with Forbes, Christian Hubicki, head of the Optimal Robotics Laboratory at Florida State, predicted that the robots of Musk will be doomed to become scrap metal and plastic once left to their own devices on the red planet. Quote, humanoids fall down, they break. Their code crashes. Right now, humanoids aren't reliable enough to be autonomous on Earth, let alone Mars, unquote. Musk has pushed his automaker Tesla into a pivot toward robotics and AI because, you know, the cars aren't selling. The flagship robot is Optimus. According to Musk, Tesla will build 100,000 of them per month by next year. The entire humanoid robotics industry hasn't been able to scale or even have a market it can sell to, with Musk's bot, specifically a video demonstration of Optimus, shared last month, was still laughably limited. The robot took painfully long to answer simple questions, glitched out mid-sentence, and walked chunkily. I thought that was the idea. This, by the way, from Futurism. He has already taken his unproven humanoids into his grand vision of colonizing Mars. That's part of his even grander vision of expanding consciousness to the stars. And I don't think he means in Hollywood. He claims that Optimus robots will be taken to Mars aboard his Starship rocket by the end of next year. So set your watches. Most likely first flight without humans in 3 to 5 years. Next flight 5 to 5 years with humans. Mars City self-sustaining in 20 to 30 years, said Elon. Said Hubicki about robots. NASA has deployed humanoid robots in space only on space stations where humans are already there to fix them. In space, on Mars, he says there are no humans to rescue it and replacement parts are a nightmare to ship in. Without a major technological leap in humanoid reliability, an unaccompanied humanoid on Mars wouldn't be functional for long. Unquote. Sounds like Musk love. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this week's edition of the show. Back next week, same time, same radio station, or on the audio device of your choice whenever you want it. Hope you can be here. I don't mean here. I live here. The email address for this program, your chance to get Cars I Talk t-shirts, maybe, and a playlist of the music heard here on, as well as a lot of stuff to look at and read and enjoy, all at harryshearer.com. And I'm on Blue Sky at Harry Shearer. A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego and Hawaii desks, to Pam Halstead, and to Thomas Walsh here at WWNO for help with today's broadcast. It certainly benefited from the help. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Changes Easy radio network. Ask Jennifer Farrell. So long from the autumnal Crescent City.